When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Hello out there in archaeology podcast land. This is Dr. Alan Garfinkel. I'm the president and founder of the California Rock Art Foundation. And what we do is we identify, evaluate, manage, and conserve rock art both in Alta California and in Baja California. We conduct field trips, we have trainings, exercise, we do research, and in every way possible, we try to preserve, protect, and coordinate treasures of Alta and Baja California rock art, of which there are many and diverse. We also work closely with Native Americans and partner with them to recognize and protect sacred sites. So for more info about the fabulous California Rock Art Foundation, you can go to carockart.org. Also, I'm open to give me a call, 805-312-2261. We would welcome sponsorship or underwriting, helping us to defray the costs of our podcasts, and also membership in California Rock Art Foundation. And of course, donations, since we are a 501c3 nonprofit scientific and educational corporation. God bless everyone out there in podcast land.
You're listening to the Rock Art Podcast. Join us every week for fascinating tales of rock art, adventure, and archaeology. Find our contact info in the show notes and send us your suggestions.
Hello out there in archaeology podcast land. This is your host, Dr. Alan Garfinkel, introducing episode 77. And we're going to be hearing from Noel Hidalgo Tan from Bangkok in Southeast Asia. Can you imagine? And we're going to be talking about a world-class platform to learn a bit more about the global vision of rock art scholars all over the world. Now, this is really one you don't want to miss. Hello out there in archaeology podcast land. This is your host, Dr. Alan Garfinkel. We're going to hear from Noel, who's a professor and a remarkable researcher who does work in Southeast Asia. And he, in fact, does specialize in rock art. And he graced our presence just a few months ago. And in fact, the reason I've asked him back is he wants to promote and publicize and talk about quite a remarkable platform that he's going to be initiating. It'll be an online course in world rock art. Is that right, Noel? Do I have it right?
Yeah, well, almost. I'm not a professor.
Okay.
I don't teach. Technically, my designation is the senior specialist in archaeology.
Okay.
Which is a very long and roundabout way of saying, well, yeah, everything that has to do with archaeology is under my purview.
Yes.
In my organization. And the organization, well, so the last time I was talking to you, I had hinted at the idea that I was going to launch a course on rock art, an online course, which is why I'm here today, to tell you and tell everyone about it.
I think you have a few participants, don't you, signed up?
Yeah, we just crossed 100 participants yesterday.
Oh, my word. Wow.
I'm hoping to get a lot more because we can support up to 1,000. So
believe you me, that's amazing. For an initial course that hasn't been offered, to have 100 people online to listen to about world rock art, Noel, that is absolutely fabulous.
Yeah, so I'm quite excited and I'm quite happy with the stuff that we're putting out together. So the course is called Rock Art in Southeast Asia and the World. And I'll need to back up a bit because, first of all, I work for the Southeast Asian Ministers of Education Regional Center for Archaeology and Fine Arts. So it's a mouthful.
And that's quite a mouthful, I would say.
Regionally, we're known as SPAFA for short. That's also another story. But when we first started out, we were called the Special Project in Archaeology and Fine Arts, so SPAFA. And then a few years later, we got upgraded into a center. So now we're the regional center, but then the name SPAFA stuck, and it's easy to say. So we've been SPAFA for 50 years. That's where we are. So we've been affected by COVID, like many people. We used to have international meetings, travel around, organize workshops for archaeologists and other professionals and cultural heritage in the region. And because of COVID, we couldn't do any of that. And so last year, we changed one of our programs. We had planned to do a intensive field course on bones conservation in Thailand 2 years ago. We couldn't do it because of COVID. So last year we changed that field course into an online course, which was, I think, pretty successful. We had a bunch of regional experts divvied out topics, and then we had these this 2 month course where people could learn about different aspects of bone conservation in Southeast Asia.
Now tell me how that was done. When you say it's an online course, is it video? Is it Zoom? Is it audio? How does that work?
So we have like say 6 weeks of lectures. It's designed to be asynchronous. So being the audience being as wide as it is, we decided that we didn't want to have live lectures because they would tie everybody down into specific times and places. So at the start of every week, we would have these pre-recorded videos, pre-recorded lectures. They would go live, say on Monday, mm-hmm. and then the participants could follow them at their own time. Mm-hmm. And then each lecture was accompanied by supplementary readings. People could read them or not read them if they wish. We did find that most people read them, surprisingly. And then a short quiz to just test that you actually were listening to the lectures.
And how long was each lecture?
Well, we asked our lecturers to keep them short because this is the internet age. So yes. we averaged around 20 to 30 minute lectures.
So little modules, got it.
Yeah. And I think that worked really well because I think it was really hard for our lecturers to condense, we're used to giving lectures for like 1 hour long. And then I was telling everyone to give TED Talks, basically. It was a challenge, but I think everyone stepped up to it really well. And it was good training for everyone. Everyone is starting to get online and starting to get used to the format, to the medium as well. Mm-hmm. And the participants responded really well to it because they could follow it at their own time. A lot of them would like do the lectures during the lunch break or do one in the evening, and they could space it out throughout the week.
And they could access it at their convenience.
Yes, which was a really important. We built that in at the very beginning. We knew we wanted to build a course where participants could access it at their own time. The only drawback that we had from this was that at the end, some of our participants said, well, we wish we had time to interact with the lecturers, which we because of the nature of the pre-recorded courses, we couldn't build it to. So we've taken a lot of the positives from the last course into this rock art course too. So we have we've crammed in even more lectures from the last time. The last time we had like 12 for the bones course, for the Southeast Asian course, the rock art course, we have like 21 now, which is
like
quite
21 lectures.
21 wow. lectures. We're gonna be focusing on different parts of the world for each week, and then also focusing on one specific region in Southeast Asia, because we do want to promote Southeast Asian rock art, Southeast Asian archaeology as a region, and also to let people know that, hey, so you have this survey of rock art around the world, but we do want to emphasize that Southeast Asia, which is not a region that you traditionally think about in terms of rock art, that it is an area rich in rock art.
Fantastic. So it's going to showcase the Southeast Asian rock art, but also have quite a diversity of other areas, I guess, geographies.
Yeah. Yes, we have essentially every part of the world covered. We have lectures from the Americas. We have from Europe, Africa, Greater Asia, Oceania. and Southeast Asia, so that you know you do get a whirlwind tour of the world rock art scene.
That's fabulous, absolutely fabulous. What made you think of doing this online or developing? I don't think this has been done before, has it?
No, I don't think so too. I mean, I'm sure there are, and I think I've seen a few. I mean, I definitely took an undergraduate course in world rock art, but it's always given by you know, one person. So it's a live lecture. This is the first time that you'll have a world rock art course where all the lecturers, all the instructors are the experts from their part of the world. So it's like, you know, you're going to hear about the Paleolithic rock art of Europe from Jean-Michel Chenest, who was the director of the French prehistoric organization, the National Prehistory Center, and who was in, you know, if you go to Lascaux and Chauvet, his face is all over the displays.
Fabulous.
We have the director of the Altamira Museum.
Right. For our people that may not know, and I know a tiny bit because I happen to have attended the... And in New Mexico, the International Federation of Rock Art Organizations, IFRAO, and I met some of the Altamira people that were working on that. So if you have a thumbnail sketch to just tell people about what happened and what's being done in Altamira right now. I understand that they've replicated the cave and now it's open for visitation vis-a-vis the replica. Am I correct?
Yeah. In fact, I was in Altamira 3 years ago.
Oh, really?
And it's wonderful. I mean, we went to Altamira, we went to Lascaux and Chauvet, and there they've built these, because you can't go into the actual caves because it disrupts the natural, but the replicas are really one-to-one replicas. In some moments you actually forget that you're in a building and you feel like you're in an actual cave. It's amazing. It's like that's how you do a replica.
Right. So it's the sounds, it's the sense, it's the feeling, the temperature, the whole look of the cave, the lights, the everything is just a doppelganger for the actual cave itself.
Yeah, you enter the doors. The doors close behind you, and then you're just in pitch darkness. And then the lights do the magic for you. And in fact, the magic doesn't lift. Like for the entire time that you're in the building, you don't feel as if you're in a building.
Wow, that's amazing.
And I remember we were in one of the northern Spain. So Altamira is just one side of the Paleolithic art of Spain, because they've added more into the UNESCO list. But we were in one site, Akain, where we had the whole site to ourselves, the whole building to ourselves. So we were exploring all the different caves, going through the walkways. But you only realize that it's not real when we were leaving the building and then they turned on all the lights and then you just saw the screens. You saw the fiberglass cave settings and you saw the frames and the outside of the things that you don't see when you're in the display and then you realize, oh, wait a minute.
What was the most impressive thing that you went through when you traveled through Altamira or Lascaux or Chauvet? And these were all, of course, replicas, I presume. Do they have replicas for all three?
Yes, they have replicas for all three. So what's really impressive is that, and you know, they always touch on this in the books, but you don't really understand it until you see it. They talk about how the painters use the contours of the rock to emphasize dimensionality. So like especially the bison of Altamira, they're large and they're muscular. And you don't see that until you see the real thing, or at least a replica. Did use the curvature of the rock.
Right. And so when you say see the real thing, it's the dimensions and the morphology and the actual being there physically that must touch you physiologically to sort of see that and sense it, correct?
Yeah. And then because that, you know, you usually read this in books, and books are inherently two-dimensional, right?
Right.
And you don't get it until you've seen a three-dimensional depiction of the rock art, and they're like, oh, okay, I get it now. Like how the bison seems to move when you walk around the boulder,
and how just did they do something with the flickering light, so like a fire or some sort of a torch? When one held a torch, there was suggestions that it almost looks like there's movement.
Yeah, they did. So I remember in Chauvet, they had the panel with the lion, I believe, and yes, they have it going on every 15 minutes or so. But every 15 minutes, the lights will dim, and then you will, you know, because you can control the lighting, it simulates firelight, and you get to see how the panel would have looked like in complete darkness in when you're holding a torch.
Well, let's hold that thought while we hold our torch and pick it up on the next segment. See you shortly, gang, on the flip-flop. Hello out there. We're up to the second segment of Rock Art, episode 77, with Noel Hidalgo-Tan, who is from Southeast Asia. He's coming in from that part of the universe, and in turn, we're interviewing him and talking about a worldwide rock art class that's going to be developed and available for you to participate in. So a rock art class worldwide, can you give us sort of an inventory of, you said there's about 20 or 21 different purveyors of rock art geographically. Can you give us a rundown of some of the luminaries and part of the geographies of where you've gotten people?
Yeah, in fact, before we started this call, I was doing some of the work on the back end with this course, because I'm you know, we're setting up the course right now as we speak. So let's see, we have from Europe, we have rock art of Altamira, the Paleolithic rock art of Europe, Jean-Michel Jeunesse and Pilar Fatas, George Nash, Aaron Mazel. We'll be talking. The last two will be talking about. Well, the last one, Aaron's going to be talking about the rock art of Northern England.
England, okay. Northern England, okay. So some of these things are very geographically specific. They're not broad treatments, but they're almost microscopic in the sense that they're narrow casting on their research interests.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you're kind of getting a showcase or a deep dive into the mysteries of someone's research, aren't you?
Yeah, kind of is. We to give you some more examples, we have Professor Salima Ikram. She's going to talk to us about Egyptian rock art, which you never hear about Egyptian rock art.
Egyptian rock art, never.
Maria Isabel from Argentina is going to talk about the rock art of the Southern Andes. So, you know, not just the Andes, but the Southern Andes. And then from Southeast Asia, we have talks about the rock art of the Philippines, the rock art of East Timor, the rock art of Peninsular Malaysia, the rock art of Thailand. We have talks about the rock art of Southern China, rock art of India, the rock art of Oceania.
Wow.
It is a wide survey.
It is.
And they do vary in terms of granularity, but I think taken as a whole, you do get a nice sense of, which is what intended. Yeah. You get a sense of everything out there.
So you have old world and new world rock art, I presume.
Yep.
And the new world rock art is represented in any other geographies besides the one that you mentioned?
No, not that I can think of.
Okay. But you have South America, correct?
We have South America, yes.
Yes. So interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah. So we have one from North America and one from South America.
And who's in North America? Who's going to be represented?
Yanni Lubser is going to talk about the rock art of southeastern United States.
Okay. And what part of the U.S. is he going to chat about?
In the region of Georgia.
Georgia.
And surrounding states. Yeah.
And you know what? I know nothing about that. Absolutely. didn't even realize that there's rock art in Georgia.
You and me places. Both.
You know, I mean, I thought you were going to say the American Southwest, the Great Basin, you know, Pecos tradition in South, you know, something that I knew something about. Never heard a word about Georgia. That's awesome.
Yeah, you know, that's the great thing about this course. I think there is literally something you will come away learning something from, even if you know a little bit about rock art in your part of the world. I don't think you know about rock art about, you know, these parts of the world too.
No. I mean, that's fabulous. Absolutely fabulous.
Oh, of course. And I forget, we have the Rock Art of Australia, because these are, you know, I studied in Australia. And we have really good stuff from Australia too. I would be remiss by not mentioning that.
Is that going to be represented by you or someone else?
No, I have Paul Tayson, who is my former supervisor, and Joe McDonald.
Oh, yeah.
So someone from
Joe,
the East Coast and someone from the West Coast too.
Yes, and the West Coast. So, yeah, I met Joe, I think, a couple of times. I know she teaches, you know, both in Australia, but also at the University of California, Berkeley, I believe. And one of my board members from the California Rock Art Foundation did her PhD on rock art. Her name is Donna Gillette. She's been very busy with the American Rock Art Research Association. But her research is throughout California, mainly on the coastal areas. And it's about what she calls PCNs, or these, I don't even know what it stands for, but it's these cupule boulder petroglyphs that are embedded with these rather unusual convex and concave elements to them. And they're found only in certain lithologies, like in serpentine or in steatite boulders. Amazing. And they're literally from the northern edge of California, little tipping over into Oregon, all the way down into just the northern tip of the Baja Peninsula. And they mainly occur along the coast. And they appear to be very, very, very ancient. There's discussions that they came in with what they call the Hokan people, the people that were some of the first in migration or realm into California. But so that was her dissertation research. And no one had really done any work on this class of rock art sites. So she pioneered some certainly interesting work.
That's really interesting, because it's, you know, as a region, I consider myself a regionalist, particular to Southeast Asia. So I always thought of myself as, I've had a really good sense of the diversity of rock art, at least in Southeast Asia. But in putting this course together, and then you realize, I know nothing about the diversity of rock art, because it's a lot more diverse than I thought, and which is really humbling in a way. And I'm glad to be able to convey that in a course.
Yes. And I think it's almost as though, you know, I've said this before, but when you think about that, you know something about a subject, right? Like, for instance, I had been studying the prehistory, the anthropology, the archaeology of Eastern California for most of my adult life. Let's say at least 40 years. How's that? And then I meet up with a group of Native Americans and publish a book on the anthropology, ethnology, rock art, basketry, language of these native people, including their sacred narrative. And I learned more in 4 years than I learned in 40 years, just because you're working with the people themselves. Have you run across anything like that?
Yeah, just by putting this course together, I've learned so much about rock art that's challenging. You know, it's not challenging, but reminding me about that there is much more to know than beyond my own framework.
What's the sort of the greatest takeaway that you have from starting to do this yourself, besides the diversity of rock art and diversity of sort of rock art specializations? What's the thread that ties us together, if anything, when we think of rock art scholars? Why do people get enmeshed and obsessed with rock art?
Obsessed is a good word. I don't know if you noticed this too, but there is something about rock art that is so accessible that it almost turns people crazy for rock art. right?
It always turns people crazy. Okay.
It really sparks imagination, and it really,
yes, it does,
gets people. You know, we as academics, we are only just one kind of rock art enthusiast. There are many other kinds of rock art enthusiasts. Some certainly more unusual than us academic types.
Oh yeah. There's those that are artists, of course, right? The artist side that appreciates it. There's people that are obsessed with the acoustics of rock art and the sounds.
And then the tourists, the people who want to go to every rock art site out there.
Yes. Right. They wanna check off all the boxes. There's, you know, the avocationalist that just loves the aura and the cultural associations of rock art. The California Rock Art Foundation just did 4 trips, cultural tours, to the great mural rock art of Baja California, believe it or not. And they were all filled. I guess it was all post-COVID. Everybody wanted to go there. But to get there, talk about it, they wanted to go, it has to be an adventure. So we went to this area, Sierra de San Francisco, where there's no roads, of course, and the trails that are there are only manageable on the backs of mules. And then on the backs of mules, then your gear is moved on burros, and you have the vaqueros that help you to navigate, and those that are experts in this area to keep you safe and on the trail and not down the drainage in the Grand Canyon of Mexico. So you can imagine, this is where we have those murals that are larger than life, some of the largest prehistoric paintings in the world. They call the Great Mural Rock Art of Baja California. Mm. So, but the reason I bring that up is when the people came back, they told me they were very, you know, enamored with the rock art, certainly, and the vistas. But one of their favorite things about the whole tour was the culture of the people who were associated with that part of the world. It was such a challenging environment, such a deficient environment, and so natural and unimpaired that there was some sort of a flavor or a connection with the local ecology and the local people that just permeated their whole experience. And they found that to be one of the more wondrous aspects of participating in rock art adventures. I think you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, certainly there's a large degree of enthusiasm.
Yeah, they go there for the adventure, the epic quality, the place that they get to see, the circumstances, the ecology, the landforms, the vistas, the adventure. That's what I'm searching, the adventure. So that's our second segment. on the third go around, let's move a little closer to the dealing with some of the details of the course and what one might want to know about it and how to access it.
Yep.
See you in the flip-flop, gang. Here we go, gang. Rock Art 77 with Noel and the course of World Rock Art out of Southeast Asia and all around the globe. Noel, take it away. How can they get more information on this course, first of all?
Cool. So information on the course can be found on our website. It's www.cemeo/spafa/rockart.
And if I was going to Google the course, what's it called?
Rock Art in Southeast Asia and the World.
Okay.
And I also have a link on my personal website. So southeastasianarchaeology.com/rockart.
Okay. And when does it get started?
So it starts on 2nd of May. It'll run all the way to 24th of June. So there'll be 7 weeks of lectures. Every new lectures come up every Monday, about 3 or 4 of them every week. And then you can follow them in your own time. Most of the lectures are around half an hour long. Some of them are longer, but not most of them. You follow lectures. You can do the readings if you want, and then do a small quiz at the end. in between the lectures, we also have virtual site visits. So we have a virtual site visit to the Shaovey Caves. We have a virtual site visit to Gua Tambun in Malaysia, which is one of the sites that I worked on in my MA work. And then next week, I'm going out of Bangkok. We're going to film a virtual site visit in a place called Saraburi. There's a rock art site in a province near Bangkok where you have a Buddhist temple, but there's also rock art in the Buddhist temple too.
Gotcha. So when they sign up for this, is there a cost?
Yes. So the course is about $30 US. It's not terribly expensive, but I think it's well worth for what you're getting. You're getting to learn about rock art from around the world, from the very experts from that part of the world.
Is the course associated with any sort of academic institution so they can get course credit, or is this considered to be something independent of that?
So the course is more general than academic, but
okay.
CMIO, the SPAFA, the center that I work for, we are a training institution. There is a certificate at the end of the course, and in fact, we have two levels of certification. We have just the generic certificate of participation, but mm-hmm. if you do want to get a certificate of completion, you do have to finish all the quizzes to show that you have understood the courses. In the past, we have used the two levels of for the bones course that we first did, you have to get the certificate of completion in order to join our physical workshops in the future.
Oh, I see. Okay. So the two levels of courses, two levels of sort of finishing this. Additionally, so you said there's about 21 different sort of modules or lectures. Am I correct?
Something like that. Yes. Yes. Yeah. 21-ish.
And so are there multiple per week?
Yes, you'll get about maybe three or four a week.
I see. Okay. And how many of these would one have to attend to be considered that they completed the course?
All of them. You have to finish all the quizzes.
All right. Gotcha. So it's a rigorous course with an important level of completion.
You know, you're going to have to work for that certificate of completion.
Gotcha.
But if you want to be a tourist, you can just be a tourist. You can come in and sure. You know, so
come in. Yeah,
we've designed the course so that you know if you want to take it seriously, you can. If you want to just come by, listen to the lectures, you also can.
Great. And the way these are set up, we can access them basically anytime. Even after that week is over, I could go back and pick up the ones I missed.
Yeah.
Am I correct?
There will be a few live events, which we're still trying to arrange. So, you know, like I said, the last time around, people really missed interacting with the lecturers.
Yeah.
So we are trying to tie in two or three live question and answer sessions.
So like a Q&A?
Yeah. It's a lot harder than it looks because everyone's from different time zones. So,
and will that be that has to be live? And
that has to be live.
And will it be visual as well as auditory or no?
Yes, it will be like a webinar, so like a Zoom meeting or a Google.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, how cool is that? I love it.
So that's something that I think people missed from the last time. So we really want to put that in.
Well, this is a tremendous amount of work you're putting into this.
It is.
I mean, I'm thinking about this more and more, and I'm going, oh my word, what an effort to really convene such a complex platform, and probably to get all of these individuals signed up and committed, and to get the material available on a singular platform to present this kind of complex, multifaceted, worldwide series of lectures. I'm impressed, needless
to
say.
Yeah, I think there's also, you know, certainly time and place has to do with it. I don't think there are many organizations around the world that can do something like this. So I'm not a pure academic, and I belong to a regional training center, so that
right.
Allows me this opportunity to convene a course like this, because we already do regional trainings.
So you have the sophistication, you've got the platforms, you've got the technology at your fingertips, where other places couldn't do this.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And of course, you know, us coming out of COVID, where we've come through this 2 or 3 years of just hellish being unable to do anything in person. So we were well poised to, you know, it was the right time and place to do something like this.
Well, I'm impressed. What else should I ask you to assist you in sort of coming together and capturing the imagination and interest in our audience?
Well, you know, to you who's listening to this, I hope this course sounds like something you might be interested in, and I hope to see you there. I hope you can join us, or you know, tell your friends, because I really am really proud about the course that we've put together. And I really want to get this word out to everyone.
Is there some sort of an overview, a visual overview of what you've got going on your website or on a platform that when I go there to the website, I can see the various people and presentations? Have you gotten that far?
Yes. Yes. So the course website has all the information that you have. So it has the outline of the course outline. It has profiles of all the speakers. It has information of how you join. Everything is done through Google Classroom. That's okay. The easiest way that we've been able to do it.
Is that a user-friendly platform?
It is. Yeah, I don't think anyone's had difficulties with it. You know, invariably, I always find, you know, the launch days are the hardest, but
yeah.
We've done this once before, so I think we've done most of the mistakes the last time around.
Well, that's good. That's very exciting. Well, I'm certainly interested in attending both as a student and perhaps even a presenter. And it's rather exciting to know more about this. I was interested when I first heard about it, and I thought of you again when we, you know, sort of entertained the notion to interact and knew that this was going to be coming up shortly.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and thanks for allowing me this opportunity to talk about it.
Yeah, and I'd recommend it to our listeners who want to learn something about rock art on a much more broader scale than anything I'm able to produce in a 1 hour, you know, capture from a singular individual.
So I'll add some links to the show notes, I suppose, to direct you to where to go for this course.
Absolutely. And as I get people that are interested in sending me email, I'm going to forward it to you and see if we can get them signed up. But sounds like the investment of $30 is the biggest bargain this side of the Pecos.
Yeah, we didn't price it to... We're not making a profit out of this. That's really the other thing.
No, I don't think so. Well, God bless you. That's it for now. See you next week, gang.
Thanks. Bye.
See you on the flip-flop.
Thanks for listening to the Rock Art Podcast with Dr. Alan Garfinkel and Chris Webster. Find show notes and contact information at www.arcpodnet.com/rockart. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sharing this podcast with your family and friends. This episode was produced by Chris Webster from his RV traveling the United States, Tristan Boyle in Scotland, DigTech LLC, Cultural Media, and the Archaeology Podcast Network, and was edited by Rachel Roden.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.